Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. I want to play something for you. That was Milwaukee native Joe Wong from his debut album, Night Creatures. Joe is an acclaimed drummer and composer. He's composed music for some of the most groundbreaking television shows of the streaming era, including Russian Doll, Master of None, and Midnight Gospel. Joe is also the creator and host of the popular podcast, The Trap Set. The podcast features interviews and stories with fellow drummers and drumming enthusiasts, including Phil Collins, Sheila E., and Fred Armisen. Joe joined us from his Los Angeles studio to talk about his debut album, his podcast, and composing work, and how his passion for drums kicked off his journey from Cream City to Tinseltown.
I discovered drums as something that I could participate in when I was 11. Obviously, I was aware of drums before then. And I had played other instruments starting when I was 6. But I started playing drums when I was 11. And the drums felt like a vehicle into the world and also the medium through which I found myself at the time.
Wow.
I can remember the first time I played drums with another musician and how incredible it felt. And in some ways, I feel like I've been chasing that feeling my whole life.
Interesting. That's very cool. You attended the prestigious Berklee College of Music. What was that experience like?
It was interesting. I had already had some experience recording and touring and had found an artistic voice to a certain extent before I went to the school. But then when I went to the school, it made me question everything and subvert my own voice and absorb information from a lot of different sources. And it was a bit overwhelming. I only went for a couple years. And after that, I felt like I had gotten what I needed out of the school. And so then I kind of retreated to a farmhouse in Wisconsin to try to parse through everything and metabolize the information that I had gotten.
Can you take me through that experience and then how that experience combined with the Berklee experience shaped your creative path going forward?
Well, I was at the cabin for only, you know, less than a year. So I was there on a non-functioning farm playing music 12 to 15 hours a day and kind of going nuts. But I was basically trying to figure out what information that I had been exposed to in the past couple of years that I wanted to hold on to and develop and what I wanted to let go of. It was just a way of kind of trying to find my center again.
You started your drumming podcast, The Trap Set, about 5 years ago. What motivated you to do this?
I was on tour with an artist called Marnie Stern at the time. And Marnie is now the guitar player in the 8G band on the Seth Meyers show.
Oh, yeah.
But okay. Before that, she made several really incredible experimental albums. And I went on some of her final tours when she was doing that. And we got invited to a taping of Saturday Night Live after one of our shows in New York. And it turns out that my friend Brendan Canty, who ultimately became the first guest on the podcast, was there. And Brendan was the drummer of Fugazi, but after that, he started a career as a film and TV composer, and he had a family, and he had essentially created a well-rounded life and had done everything that I could ever dream of doing. And so after the taping, we drank whiskey together and I was just basically parsing through all of my neuroses with Brendan and trying to figure out how he built the life that he had.
I have a lot of work to do. That's really it. This spring, I have to finish two films and I have a big soundtrack job and I just really can't, you know, I just have to be working all the time. And it's like when you start drinking at night, you know, you end up spending a lot of time thinking about going out and hanging out with your friends. And it's really great and it's really fun, but you really don't get half the work done you should be.
Right.
So I hate to lay it on you, but
I thought I was feeding the muse the whole time.
I know, right? So did I.
That's how it all started. Basically, out of my desire to work through my demons with my musical heroes.
Around the same time you were launching the Trap Set, you were tapped to do original music work for Aziz Ansari's Netflix series Master of None. How did that happen?
I had toured years before that with a band called Parts and Labor, which was based in New York. And on one of our first trips out to Los Angeles, I met a woman named Carrie Kirchheimer Druten, who was one of the music supervisors on Master of None and previously had music supervised several shows on NBC, like Parks and Recreation, for example. And Carrie is also a drummer and played in a band in LA called Bipolar Bear. And we just became friends over the years. And when Aziz was looking for somebody to do music for his show, she helped, you know, conduct a search. And obviously, because we were friends, she reached out to me. And at the time, I was working with a partner who still lives in Milwaukee, Didier LaPlay. And so we made some demos, and Aziz and the other music supervisor, Zach Cowie, were really into what we were doing, and that's how that happened.
You've also done the score for Natasha Lyonne's acclaimed Netflix series Russian Doll and Pendleton Ward's new show The Midnight Gospel. You've also done composing work for David Chang's Ugly Delicious and Awkwafina is Nora from Queens. This is a really diverse list. How do you approach scoring for each of these very different shows?
Well, the underlying goal, no matter who I'm working with, is to try to see the world of that show or film through the eyes of whoever is creating it, so I have an understanding of what the emotional needs are from their perspective. And then I try not to think about it too much. You know, early on in the process, we use our conscious minds to kind of come up with a sonic palette for that show so that there's a cohesion between the different cues. And we work on finding certain melodic themes that can carry the film or show. But then after that, I try my best to get into the flow where I'm not thinking. And so everything in my studio is set up so that I don't have to think. Everything is wired into place and ready to go so that I can just disengage my rational mind and let my creative mind do the work. It's almost like if you're eating a meal, you think about the meal as it's going into your mouth, but most of the digestive process is involuntary and something that you're not aware of unless something's going wrong. And I try to be careful about how I'm feeding the ideas into my brain as we're starting the project. But then after that, I just try to let my subconscious do the work.
Well, it's worked very well for you. And during all the scoring work you've been doing, you still managed to find time to put together your debut album, Night Creatures. How long has this project been percolating?
I think it started percolating shortly before I scored Russian Doll. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really interesting to watch Natasha as she was making Russian Doll, because it was basically her first project as a creator. She had acted in lots of different things before then, but this was her first kind of large-scale project as, you know, the showrunner and co-creator. And I got to see her confront all of the attendant insecurities that come along with making something for the first time. And seeing her navigate through that was really instructive as far as how I pushed myself through it. But I also was smart enough to enlist Mary Timoney to produce the album, and so then I could be accountable to her. And she's an amazing artist who's done dozens of records with different bands and had lots of experience. And I had played drums in her band, so we already had a great relationship and a similar aesthetic. And so working with her helped me, you know, take my own project more seriously. And ultimately, what I had to do is treat myself like a client, like, you know, treat my own project with the same level of seriousness that I would give to Natasha or Penn or Aziz's projects.
Mm-hmm. And the album feels very personal. You've said it's about loss. How so?
Well, it was written during the time that my dad was dying. And I was parsing through all of the grief that comes along with losing somebody piece by piece. My dad had a massive stroke in 2010, and I had to step in and help manage his life for a few years after the stroke, and ultimately he never recovered. And so I saw him lose pieces of his personality over time, and that's basically what the album is about. It's my way of working through that.
Mm, yeah, I'm sorry about the loss of your father. Did making the album help you come to terms with this loss?
It's interesting because I don't know if you've seen Midnight Gospel, but that theme runs through the show. And then the final episode of the show, without giving too much away, is about confronting the mortality of self and of a parent. And so it was kind of a perfect project for me at the time. Like Duncan, who co-created the show with Penn, was going through that when the conversation that structures the final episode was taking place. So it was almost like one of those situations where it really felt like it was meant to be.
Yeah, and the first single is called Dreams Wash Away, and it can be heard in the season finale of the Midnight Gospel. Can you tell me a bit about this song?
Well, it's a song about coming to terms with the fact that we're all going to shed everything that we think about as far as our personality. So there's a line that says, the weight of wills slowly diminishes and fear subsides. All things dissolve in time. And if we look at it from an evolutionary standpoint, you know, all of these things evolved to keep us alive as beings, but there can arise certain situations where our survival instinct is in conflict with our best interests as a soul.
You recorded some of the album in the famous Jim Henson Studios in Hollywood, the same studio where Quincy Jones recorded We Are the World, right?
That's right. Yeah, Studio A. And when Quincy was working there, it was A&M Studios. And prior to that, it was Charlie Chaplin's lot.
What was that like to record there?
It was great. It was a lot of work went into prepping the orchestral arrangements, which is the part that we recorded in at Henson. The level of musicianship from the orchestral players was astronomical, and it allowed us to track the entire album in a matter of hours. But one thing that was really interesting that happened while I was tracking it is I was kind of engineering it myself, and I was talking to the players about something, and I felt somebody behind me, and I turned around and Cat Stevens was standing there. And I grew up listening to Cat Stevens, and so it was really bizarre and kind of surreal, but he said nice tunes, and that was enough praise to get me through the rest of the day. Bathing in the afterglow, dreaming of affections in the snow, long ago. I met comedian Fred Armisen for an episode of The Trap Set, and you've continued to collaborate with him. If you don't mind my asking, and if you can talk about it, is there anything that you guys are currently cooking up? I actually met Fred because he's a drummer. And when I was a teenager living in Milwaukee, I had a band that would go down to Chicago and play shows. And Fred, at the time, was in a band called Trenchmouth. So I originally met him back in the mid-90s, although he doesn't remember that. But yeah, I helped produce his stand-up special, Stand Up for Drummers. And then as a result of that, I've been kind of mentored by Fred's producing partner, Alice Mathias. And Alice and I are working on developing some other projects for Fred to be a part of.
Oh, cool.
Fred's company.
All right, cool. We'll look forward to those. So what is next for you? Another album, scoring more shows, or perhaps scoring feature films?
Yeah, as far as what's next, yeah, I mean, I feel like I kind of just scratched the surface of what I want to do artistically with this first album. And at the same time, I've developed this muscle of writing a lot of material from my career as a film and TV composer. So I'm trying to deploy that muscle in service of making another album right now. And ultimately, what I would love to do is spend about half my time making my own records and touring, and half of my time either producing shows for people like Fred or scoring shows for people like Penn Ward.
Yeah, that sounds like the best of both worlds. Joe Wong, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Joe Wong is a film and TV composer. His debut solo album is called Night Creatures. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Drew McGarry, Mary South, and Joe Wong. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta Podcast via Apple Podcasts or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And make sure to let us know what you think by leaving a rating or a comment. You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions. Special thanks to producer Brad Kohlberg.
He loves food, he loves travel, he's devilishly handsome, and he knows how to do a classic wave and kiss.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
You know, after work, I'm going to go home, cuddle up with my loving wife, and watch 3 to 5 hours of a critically acclaimed drama, and then go to sleep.
Our executive producer, nay, showrunner, is Adam Friedrich.
I am sorry for yelling. I'm having a very hard, never-ending night.
And thanks to you, our alphas. We'll see you next week. Take care, and please stay safe. I'm Doug Gordon.
Hey. You mind if I interview you for my video Spacecast?